get a look now in our second segment of the free agent window into some of the deals that have been done before March 11th as teams move to lock down at some of their otherwise would-be free agents before they hit the market. And Noel, there's a clutch of fairly eye-catching deals to look over. Chiefs were quite active in who they kept in the building. Drew Tranquill, Chris Jones and L'Jarius Sneed now all locked down, all key pieces, and interesting which side of the ball they've been active on.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the first thing that jumps out at you is that Chris Jones deal. I mean, what a deal he got himself there. But I mean, I think even though they didn't franchise tag him, I think he made it very clear where he wanted to be. And the Chiefs, you just knew he's there. Patrick Mahomes on the defensive side of the ball. So that was something that wasn't surprising, although the deal itself was eye-watering, fair play to him. Brian talks about Sneed there being franchise tagged. For me, that always felt like they weren't going to keep him, and this was a way to maybe look to get him traded. And I still think that's something that may happen. I think he's going to be playing this $19 million for the franchise tag for him there this season. I don't think, well, he could end up there, but I don't think that's the plan to actually have him there. I think there probably will be someone who will be willing to give the trade compensation for him. He had a really, really good season, and you know, they win the Super Bowl, and maybe his stock is never going to be higher. But overall, I think the Chiefs, yeah, you look at the defense, there's a lot kind of going on there at the moment. And yeah, once they get Chris Jones, I think, as I say, he is the leader of that defense. I mean, you get him sorted, you know, they have good players there, and I think they'll be strong there next season, just as they were this year.
I think if it wasn't for that final drive in the Super Bowl, I think Chris Jones might have actually had a decent chance of being Super Bowl MVP. He was unbelievable in that game at Vegas as well. He's an absolute gem of a player. Brian, another team very active. I love the NFC South, as you know. I love the old slow bicycle race. The Bucs are running back. They got Baker Mayfield, Mike Evans, and now Antoine Winfield all locked down. I mean,
the Bucs are winning
playoff place. Yeah. You can go out in the first round, but you still got to the dance.
The Bucs are winning the offseason. Is that what was suggested last night? I was watching the lead up the free agency frenzy, as they call it, and then I found Network, and they were suggesting the Bucs won the offseason before teams even got into signing or agreeing deals today. Baker's back.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I was just laughing thinking. You look at the way the AFC, the way the playoffs finished last year, and like after the season the Ravens had, they're like, we've got Lamar Jackson, MVP, all this talent on both sides of the ball, and we still got rolled over by the Chiefs. Josh Allen sitting at home watching after going out, similar fashion. The Bucs are running it back with Baker Mayfield. It's all they got to do. You don't have to outrun the Tiger. You just have to outrun the guy next to you in the NFC side.
The eye of the Tiger is what someone suggested Baker has found, because let's be fair, this time last year, he looked like he was a spent force. People had given up on him. The Bucs gave him that opportunity. He has proven himself over the course of the year. He played really well in the back end of the season, which kind of surprised me. With all due respect, the Eagles were gone at that stage, but they still went down and put a marker down. And I felt he played quite well in Detroit, as Eagles really came up against a team that was just a little bit better than him. And, you know, I still think back to that great drive leading up to halftime where he went 91 yards and he has that great throw to Mike Evans and he got back in the game. He proved himself time and time again last year when it looked like he was out of it. Contract did surprise me. I won't lie. I thought it was a bit aggressive from the Bucs, but then they're probably looking at it from a standpoint of, and we've had this conversation, where do they go if they don't sign Baker Mayfield? Because Baker Mayfield, by all accounts, had potential opportunities to go to New England, and even Atlanta were in the mix, because the Orlando suggested 6 weeks ago the Falcons were very keen to have a conversation with him. Mike Evans is back. They struck up a great relationship, and on the defensive side, obviously, they've tagged Antoine Winfield Jr. with a view, again, similar scenario to what we discussed there. Wins got a view to get a deal done, and it looks more like they will, as opposed to him being disappointed by being tagged. You could argue they're rightly favourites, even though it's only March, but as I said earlier on the show, the Falcons have brought in one of the gunslingers from the NFL in Kirk Cousins. They might have a different opinion on this, but look, Bucs have won the offseason. That's what we...
Noel, it was a good start to the offseason for the Bears. That one of the players they needed to lock down was Jalen Johnson. They initially franchise tagged him, but then managed to come to terms. And looks like one of those rare win-wins, a good deal for both sides. Doesn't break the bank from the Bears' perspective. It's about as well as you're going to do for a cornerback of that level of talent, and he's happy to stay.
Yeah, I was actually delighted to see that deal when it got done, because I know last season Jalen Johnson was talking about, you know, I wasn't looking to reset the market. I just wanted to get a deal done. He wanted to stay at the Bears. Then he kind of was given permission to look for a trade. But we knew the Bears didn't really want to trade him, so they kind of put his value high. So to see the deal they got done this time, in fairness to him, he didn't reset the cornerback market, even though he had a really, really good season and he could have pushed for possibly more. This looks like a really good deal for both sides. A player who clearly wants to stay at the Bears, who is now seen as, I know they brought in Kevin Byard there, who will be experienced, but other than him, he was that main guy in that defensive backs room now. And Eddie Jackson retired. Jalen Johnson is one of those experienced pros that these young guys can look up to. So he got that sorted and it didn't break the bank for the Bears. A player who's happy at a team where he's at, got a good contract, a team that really wanted to keep him and got a good deal on that contract. And I think, yeah, I never had to worry though. I always felt that this franchise tag, again, as we talked about other players, was a placeholder. Both parties seemed to want to get it done. I was afraid because Johnson had such a good season, maybe his expectations of what he should get would have crept up a bit and that might have caused a bit of a problem. But seemingly not. They got it done. And I mean, it was happy days so far anyway.
Brian, happy days for the Ravens as well, who got a deal done with Justin Madubuike, who's, you know, a player.
I'm glad you pronounced it because I wasn't going there.
Walk past him, you know, sorry, name drop here, mind your toes. Walk past him when we're in the Mandalay Bay in Vegas. That is a large human being. Like, he's negotiating for me on the other side of the table. I give him whatever he wants. $98 million, done, no problem.
You should have been chasing him. You should have been chasing him like the way I do with Joshua Dobbs. Find someone who's a little bit smaller and easier to keep up with. That's the best way to go with these things. Look, he was a fantastic for the Ravens last year. I think the Ravens have recognised, and very much to what we spoke about last offseason, they know they're in a very strong position. Unfortunately, it wasn't to be in terms of the championship game. There's such a hurdle on their playoff performances and for the mayor, unfortunately. But, you know, right now you still argue, even if they weren't to go out there and make any major splashes this offseason, they would still be up there. And I suppose the focus for them was trying to make sure they keep the players in-house. That's were part of the bigger picture there last year in terms of how well they were offensive and defense. It was just in terms of the Ravens wanting to throw out there. Gus Edwards has gone to the Chargers, which was announced just prior to us coming on. And that's a bit of a loss. I know we spoke about the running back meeting which they had over the course of the season, and there was Bears that stepped up, but he was kind of the forefront for large parts of the season. So interesting to see how they react to that. He obviously would have been one of the key players in terms of blocking for the running back. So big player to bring back. And the Ravens will, I suppose, sit tight and see what comes in the draft more so than free agency for me.
The Jags, no, obviously didn't end last season the way they would have wanted it to. Really fell apart down the stretch. But, you know, one guy who didn't fall apart was Josh Allen, who they franchise tag now. Key part of that defense, you know, I think was their sack leader last year and one of the sack leaders in the NFL. He may not be the highest paid player named Josh Allen in the NFL, but for his position, he's going to get decent money.
Yeah, no, look, that's a player you don't want to be losing. The Jags are a team that, you know, they came a couple of years ago. They were down there. They got Trevor Lawrence, and then they kind of made that kind of step up. And players like Josh Allen are players that, you know, when you want to keep that development going, you want to keep them in house and get them sorted. So it's a big move for the Jags, and it's important for them to keep players like that, to keep that development and that building moving forward for them.
17.5 sacks last year. Like, that's a huge number. You can't let that walk.
You can't lose a player like that. No.
But it's a good point when you raise it, Nolan, that, you know, we talk about dysfunctional franchises do dysfunctional things, but functional franchises, you've got to be able to bring guys in and hang on to them, you know, to keep that culture in the locker room. You know, we see the likes of the Ravens, the Packers, Steelers, those teams consistently do that. They know when to let players go, but they also know which ones they really want to hold on to. It's not just about performances on the field, although you certainly couldn't argue that Josh Allen didn't produce on the field, but it's also about, you know, showing players coming into the NFL that, you know, you put in the shift here and you'll be rewarded, and we'll extend you. We won't wait for somebody else to pay you.
No, absolutely. But that's why, you know, all the teams have the same salary caps and the same draft, but it's the same teams that do be at the top all the time. And that's because well-run teams, you know, take care of the top players when they should take care of them. You know, ideally you want to obviously be taking care of your players that you've drafted, but even when you do bring in someone in free agency who's a good player, you know, you make sure you get them locked up. And that is why good teams do good things and other teams flounder at the bottom, like season after season.
Same with the Jags, Brian. And I know technically it's not a free agent move because it was a trade, but Mac Jones going from the Patriots to the Jags was one of the more interesting kind of footnote deals to happen in this window. What do we make of that from both sides of it? Clearly, he needs a fresh start, but he's not going to see action anytime soon unless something happens to the golden-haired one.
Yeah, I kind of feel sorry for him in a way. He's gone from a quarterback that in his fourth year was playing a playoff game, well beaten comprehensively by the Bills, to where essentially yesterday he wasn't even much of a storyline. The fact that there was a trade made and he goes for a lesser round pick. Like I think he's recognized he's going to have to go there. And I don't know, maybe he's modeling on other quarterbacks around the league who take a year out, essentially go to a different team, play backup, and hope they can find another opportunity. You know, Mitch Trubisky springs to mind, not because I'm sitting here with two Bears fans, but when he went to free agency 2 years ago to the Steelers, and there was a market for him, including the Giants were trying to get him in, it was a highly sought after market because he was arguably the best quarterback on the market. And yeah, he only played a couple of snaps for the Bills. You just wonder, is a Mac Jones next year finding a way to navigate a move back to a team where he gets an opportunity to play? But he knows the area. He's obviously, that's his local area. Maybe it suits him to go back home and, I suppose, reevaluate where he is in his career. But as you said, he's not going to get an opportunity unless Trevor gets injured, which, in fairness, has happened quite a few times over the course of the last 2 years.
So I was going to say, how strange is it? In 2021, we had these five quarterbacks, and we knew Trevor Lawrence would be number one, but of the other four, it was like, who'll go where? And now suddenly two of them are on the one roster together in Jones and Lawrence. It's amazing how quickly it can go downhill for a player.
Another point I was going to make, actually, and you've teed it up nicely for me there, Noel. The players who went in the first round of that draft, Lawrence, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, Mac Jones, and there's one other one I'm
Zach Wilson. Wilson.
Not one of them has a winning record in the NFL over their five seasons since. For all the talk that there was around that draft class, and kind of, you know, should bring chills to the hairs on the back of the neck of GMs looking at this year's draft, and all the talk about Caleb Williams and Drake May and loaded draft and all that, doesn't always pan out the way you think it will.
And how many of them are going to start next year, realistically? Is it one, Trevor Lawrence? Like, Zach Wilson's going to be moved on. Justin Fields is in an enigma. We'll go with that. You know, we don't know where he's going to end up. We spoke about it. We don't know right now where he's going to end up. Mac Jones, obviously, his hand has been declared. He's going to be a backup at best in Jacksonville. It's not a draft that many will look back on in terms of a glowing reference for quarterbacks. And, like, the Jets essentially went with him on the back of his pro day, but they're paying for it now still. But yeah, certainly it goes to show that no matter what you look at in the draft, and we get carried away come drafts, and we're looking forward to doing draft coverage years next month, but we will nitpick and we will evaluate a quarterback next month who gets selected, whether it's a JJ McCarthy on the rise. And in 2 or 3 years, we'll be looking back going, do you remember Lamar went 32 in the first round and he's arguably one of the best quarterbacks in the league? You just never know.
True that. That's pretty much all the deals that have been done, or the eye-catching ones so far, and we're kind of keeping an eye on the Twitter machine because they're rolling in all the time. But, you know, let's move on and look in our remaining segment at those who blue-chip free agents who are still on the market, and I'd imagine some of these won't be there for too long. Let's start with a defensive player, Brian. Danielle Hunter. We talked about there being not many opportunities to get an edge rusher of this caliber. People be snapping the Vikings hand off, or snapping his hand off, if the Vikings can't get a deal done.
Yeah, when the creator of the deal got announced today, a lot of people felt straight away that spells the end for Hunter, and inevitably we'll get some kind of breaking news within a couple of hours that he's secured a deal with another team, and it hasn't transpired yet. It'd be interesting to see, does the market add up even later on this evening or tomorrow? And I genuinely thought the Giants have been very outspoken in terms of the beat writers, even Joe Shane at the combine, in terms of his press conference, that they were keen to go after a defense. I read and an edge rusher, and he was suggested, but obviously if the Brian Burns data is to materialize, he's out of picture there. It'd be interesting to see where he goes, because there's been so many other moves today that you thought they were certain teams that might be in, you know, down in the pecking order for him, but it hasn't transpired. It's a surprise, because he's been a really effective player over the course of the last couple of years, and the kind of player that most fans would want on their team.
Noel, Calvin Ridley, another one who's a free agent this season. You know, we talked about some moves that the Jags had made and players that they brought in. don't know what's going to happen with Ridley, though. He's been a little bit of an enigma. At times looked like he had a really good, you know, particularly in the early games, really good connection with Trevor Lawrence.
Yes, he did. It actually is going to be very interesting to see where he does end up. I mean, we look at the wide receiver market now, and there are a few players out there, but then I think the draft will probably play a part in this as well. The draft, obviously, when you look at the wide receivers available, it seems like a lot of people in the know think that this is a really, really strong class when it comes to wide receivers. So maybe, you know, maybe people are going to leave those receivers out there in free agency, maybe into the next wave, maybe push that money down a little bit. And then someone like Ridley, who can be a very good player, he's still young, can go in there and do a job. But again, it's just interesting because you do have to factor in how the draft does play a part and how teams actually spend their free agency money. And maybe there is a bit of kind of game planning there on what way these receivers work out. Because I don't think there's been too many receivers go today, has there?
Well, I was just going to say, Gabe Davis went to the Jags. Yeah. It's the one off the top of my head. Jerry Jeudy obviously moved, but that was a trade rather than free agency. Again, like last year, there's not much value to be had in the wide receiver market by the looks.
I think there's wide receivers out there. If you're looking to completely revitalize and send your wide receiving core to the next level, I don't think there's many players in free agency that can do that for you. Maybe there's one or two in there, as I say, in the later waves of free agency who can come in and, you know, give you a bit of a boost or kind of solidify your wide receiving room that little bit. But I think in terms of like actually changing the wide receiver room, teams will probably look to some of those players in the draft who are being really, really highly touted.
The other one who's potentially on the market, Brian, is Hollywood Brown, Marquise Brown, whose last known address was in Arizona.
Arizona, I know they've had a couple of signings today, but by and large, they're very quiet. There's not a lot coming out of Arizona at the moment. It'd be interesting to see if he, you know, is able to navigate a way out there. Still years later, still shocked that the Ravens decided to make that move. The Gabe Davis one is really the only standout one. I was even looking through the tracker that we have available to us that we've, you know, put together, and he's the only wide receiver that's really is popping on the list. So the Jags have obviously made that decision. He's the man, and Calvin Ridley will find the home. Patriots been suggested, but you might see some of the players traded as opposed to free agency acquisitions and pickups. I know that it's also reported that the Pats are trying to trade Schuster and various other different wide receivers that they have within the organization. So maybe we'll see a few trades happening as opposed to the pickups. But no, it's touched on it there. You look at this draft next month and we're talking about potentially four or five wide receivers going in the first round, and certainly three going in the top 10, arguably with Neighbors and Adunze and the one escapes me off the top of my head.
Oh, Marvin.
Marvin. How did I forget Marvin? Yeah. So, but like them two are certainly going to go in the top 10, and there's a few others that could potentially be gone by the end of the fourth round. I think teams are going to recognize there's a lot of players in play come this draft, even in the second round.
Look at a couple of players and from a couple of teams that haven't particularly been active so far, keeping their powder dry at this stage. Stephon Gilmore, cornerback with the Cowboys. I don't think the Cowboys have made any moves so far. They've been very quiet by Cowboys standards.
I've lost a couple of players as well. They have obviously Pollard running back gone. They've lost a couple of players to the Commanders. Dan Quinn has obviously gone back to where he was walking, taking their center. He's gone to the Commanders, and there's another defensive player gone over there as well. I get the name escapes me, but again, they've lost a couple today. It'd be interesting to see how they react. We spoke about this time and time again, Connor. Like, the Cowboys see themselves as a team that are very much in the mix and feel they should be in the, you know, on the periphery of going to the Super Bowl. They don't see the need to be going aggressive in free agency. I think they see it as more of a tweak here and there, put themselves in a position next season. So it doesn't surprise me that they're not out there being very proactive. I don't know whether they want to be making these big splashes. Jerry Jones has alluded to that over the course of the last week. We'll do things the Cowboys way. Sometimes the Cowboys way is the most erratic way, but right now it looks like
Jerry Jones watching them get their clock cleaned at home by the Packers in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think he might have looked at the bigger picture over the course of the season. He certainly suggested that when he said I wasn't going to make any knee-jerk reactions to Mike McCarthy's position. He's going to remain as head coach. He feels that he had such a strong season that
interesting game that the team that built them, that beat them, is going tooling up in free agency, and the team that loses is sitting on its hands. Anyway, that's for another day's discussion. Another team that hasn't done much so far is the Lions, Noel, and Chauncey Gardner-Johnson potentially available as a free agent. There's a couple of safeties have moved so far. Brandon Jones, one that springs to mind. Kevin Byard, obviously another one, the Bears signed Byard. There's a market for Chauncey Gardner-Johnson if the Lions don't re-sign him.
Oh, yeah. No, you would absolutely think there would be a market for him out there. But the Lions themselves have stayed quiet. But as you say, we looked at them last season and what they've done. So they don't have too many holes there that they need to fix. So maybe they think they can do it in the draft. Sneed was someone who I thought could be, you know, could they take a chance on maybe trading for him, depending on obviously what the Chiefs want. And maybe they could get someone in there to help Hutchinson with the pass rush. But other than that, the Lions look like a solid team. They've done a great job there. They're a young enough team. I think they're going to be haunting us for a few years to come, yeah, Connor, in the NFC North. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do. Maybe they feel like they don't need to spend that big money at the first wave of free agency. Well, maybe they can fill a few holes, maybe in the second or third wave, or as you say, then maybe in the draft.
And like the Royal Rumble in the WWE, who comes in from parts unknown but Colin Cronin? Welcome, Colin. Obviously celebrating Cillian Murphy's Oscar win all day, so you had to arrive a little bit late, like all the best Cork people. Of course, Colin and Cillian Murphy live in Dublin. We saved all the best Broncos news for you, Colin, and not least the fact that you've hit the road, Jack, with Russell Wilson, who's now gone to the Steelers.
I was chatting to Bill Barnwell from ESPN. The time change when we planned that, the time change meant that I was going to be able to join you guys and then go into that. But they go earlier in the States, so people have that to look forward to tomorrow. I had a couple of very interesting conversations with him. I suppose the interesting thing from a Russ perspective is, in some ways, Connor, like last year's Steelers, or the last couple of years, the Steelers have tended to throw to the sidelines. And so it made sense. But Arthur Smith is a guy who likes to use the middle of the field. And if you take a look at Arthur Smith and his teams over the last, say, 3 years or so, generally his QBs have tended to throw to the middle of the field somewhere between 13 to 15% of the time. Russ threw to the middle of the field 5.8% of the time. Last year, Russ also didn't tend to throw beyond the line of scrimmage all that frequently.
That's because Russell can't see over the line, though, right? Isn't that
yes.
A small quarterback conundrum? You don't open up the middle of the field if you can't see over the 6'8" defensive lineman with the arms as long as his legs.
That is one of the interesting things to see how the Steelers utilize that. They obviously have, you know, in George Pickens, they have a guy who can make spectacular catches. They have a run game there. They have a pretty solid O-line. And they're not paying Russ a whole lot of money. They have a well-established coach as well. So it's not going to be a Nathaniel Hackett situation where, you know, somebody doesn't know how to use him. So, I mean, I don't see any reason why if Russ is... if he still has it and he went on and he had the fireside chat with Brandon Marshall and he said he wants another two Lombardi trophies, well, there's no excuses, I think, now for Russ, right? Because he's going to a head coach who's never had a losing season. So the pressure won't be there because they're paying him $1.5 million, right? The Broncos are paying the rest of it. So the expectations are going to be tempered by that. So I think if Russ is to do it, this is his best opportunity since he left Seattle.
Connor, just a quick one. If you look at him, suggesting he is the backup to Kenny Pickett, which I don't believe he will be come September. I know we're miles away. But Mr. Trubisky's gone back to the Bills at $2.75 million, and Russ is earning $1.21 million on the minimum salary. I'm genuinely surprised that there's not more teams out there that didn't want to suggest an opportunity to even have a conversation. I know the Giants potentially were in the mix, and I had no issue with the suggestion that he would come in and challenge Daniel Jones, because it would make sense, and I think it totally makes sense for the Steelers. I'd argue it would even make sense for the Raiders. Obviously, they've gone a different route and signed Gardner Minshew this evening, and that deal has been caught with a $25 million over 2 years. So is Gardner Minshew going to win to the Raiders and expect to be a backup on that kind of money? I would argue he wouldn't. He would think he'd be starting a quarterback, and they're picking at 13. I don't think they can get up to get a quarterback. I'm genuinely surprised, despite the 2 years in which he's had in Denver, that there weren't more teams in the mix come the end.
A couple of big players still with question marks over them, or, you know, a few that we haven't actually touched on yet. And one of them, Noel, is Derrick Henry. Where do we think Derrick Henry's going to end up?
Yeah, that could be an interesting one. I was kind of thinking maybe Derrick Henry could fit in the Chargers, but they've made a move there now, so that's not going to happen. I know Greg Roman likes to run the ball a bit. But I mean, Derrick Henry feels like one of those running backs. He's like a shooting star. He's all bright and he's amazing, but then he just goes, burns out and goes over the cliff. And I wonder if maybe he's kind of hit that point now. It'll be interesting to see, though, if somebody does bring him in to actually see if he is still the, you know, the King Henry of a couple of years ago, kind of running over defenders and dragging players with him. But where he ends up now is going to be interesting. And again, because of this whole running back thing, we'll kind of wait and see how it all kind of pans out. You've got people like Eckler out there as well, who maybe could command a bit of attention going forward. But yeah, it's a strange one because, you know, not too long ago, if you'd have said Derrick Henry would have been free and a free agent, you know, people would have been lapping him up. But that's how quickly things really, really change for these running backs.
And Brian, it's not just with Henry, the, you know, decline in production, which we've seen, but it's an awful lot of touches. You know, the Titans really look to squeeze every single drop that they could out of Henry. It's a punishing schedule that he's had, particularly last year.
Yeah, I still think back to when we went to London to watch him firsthand against the Ravens, and I think you were taken back more than I was in terms of his production in that game, how he looked completely off and kilter compared to what we saw over the course of the last 3 or 4 years. I'll throw out a team. I think this one makes a lot of sense for me. It's the Ravens. Like, Gus Edwards has just moved on to the Chargers, as no one has alluded to there. And we're talking about a team that has a running back by committee type format there. Would it suit him to go in there and not necessarily be declared as the number one back? He's there. You know, you've got J.K. Dobbins, who right now is a free agent, but looks like he may come back. You know, obviously he had his serious injury in week one last year. That might fit him and might suit him to go in there and be part of a team there that would stand there for me. But certainly knows, right? He's certainly not the player which you saw 3 or 4 years ago. You know, you look at fantasy drafts, 3 or 4 years ago, he used to the number one selection in draft boards. And, you know, he was arguably the number one running back if he was to hit the open market. But I throw him and Austin Eckler into the same mix. Like, Austin Eckler's declined significantly over the course of the last 2 years for me in terms of what we saw from previously with the Chargers. So it doesn't come as a surprise that he hasn't been picked up yet compared to the nature of what we spoke about earlier with all the running backs going off the board today.
Let's look at the defensive side of the ball for a moment, Colm, again, because, you know, I see Owen in the comments there saying hopefully Danielle Hunter lands with the 49ers, but one player who won't be with the Niners next season is Arik Armstead. They're fairly, the phrase goes, aggressive negotiations there. 49ers asked him to take a pay cut. He refused, out the door.
Yeah, an interesting one. You would imagine that he must have got a sense that the market is going to be pretty strong for him, given that, you know, I mean, look, was it a pay cut? Was it a restructure? Because I think those are a couple of things to really look at. You know, sometimes it's talked about players are helping a team out, but it's a restructure, which ultimately means that the money is just coming in a different way, but the money isn't changing. At other times, it is an actual pay cut. Say, Von Miller agreed to that to remain with the Bills, because ultimately I think Von would have been staying there. For Armstead, it's, you know, I mean, one would expect when you look at the landscape of the NFC that the 49ers should be there or thereabouts next year. So he has to feel that the money must be out there. And yet, you know, maybe it's because it happened late. But you would have thought that, you know, he was such a big name. It does mean for the 49ers, they'll surely have to designate him as a post-June one cut, because the numbers are pretty eye-watering if they don't. But they will, you imagine, look to do that. But he is a guy who has shown up on the kind of biggest stage. So I would have thought you're probably looking at another contender should be kind of the looking to take somebody like him, because he appears to enjoy playoff football. He appears to enjoy when it matters most. And he is obviously a very talented player, but, you know, the reality for everybody is the cap means you cannot keep everyone you want to.
Brian, judging by the furrowed brow there over in the corner I observe on the screen, there's obviously some breaking news.
Yeah, it probably makes sense, but it's probably a slight surprise for me. Marcus Davenport has agreed to a 1-year deal with the Lions. He obviously has a relationship with the defensive coordinator from previous times there, so I'd imagine from previous times he could with the Saints. So I'd imagine maybe it's one of those they think they can bring him in and he fits the system and worked out. And we alluded to earlier on, but we didn't really get into it. Malcolm Floyd, obviously, raised with the Bills, signed for the 49ers. So that's a kind of another player which the 49ers will probably expect to bring into the mix defensively and I suppose put the defense back on the same path as which you saw last year, despite the news today that potentially one of their, arguably one of their biggest defensive line guys may be moving on. But the Lions are doing some nice little things, and that to me kind of bodes well in terms of, you know, let's just keep tweaking what we have. We've had a really strong season. We've made the championship game. Can we just readjust things slightly and come back again stronger next year?
No, Patrick Queen at the Ravens, an interesting one for me. You know, formed a really productive tandem with Roquan Smith last year, you know, up there with probably Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw as one of the best linebacker pairings in the NFL. But linebacker isn't a premium position in the modern NFL. Looks like the Texans touted as the most likely destination, but Pro Bowl linebacker, it still looks like he's going to be heading out the door in Baltimore there, and they're not looking like they're going to re-sign.
Yeah, it's not a premium position, as you say, unless it's the Bears last season, and then it's a very premium position. But yeah, look, obviously, he brought in Roquan Smith to play with him there. That Ravens defense looked really, really good when those guys were together, and it was really cooking. But again, sometimes decisions are made, players move on, and yeah, I think he's a player who will have a market. But as you say, because of the line positional kind of, would you say, the what people think of certain positions, linebacker isn't really up there as someone that teams really, really want to pay. So it'll be interesting to see. You kind of wait to see what way that market plays out for them and how things kind of, where teams are willing to go. But he is a player who will get a team, and he'll do okay for himself, I think, in the end.
Brian, a player who might well get a team. We talked a little bit earlier about David Bakhtiari and how good he is on his day, but how he's been derailed by durability issues. Cowboys' Tyron Smith is one who could be out the door. We talked about the Cowboys standing pat, but he's going to test free agency. There's probably a market for him. Again, player who's had his injury issues, but on his day, as good a pass protector as you could possibly have for your quarterback.
I would have thought the Commanders would have been on him already, judging by the nature of what he's done today, taking two Cowboys players in, Dan Quinn having the relationship with there. For me, he'd be a good fit with a number of teams. I was surprised last week that they were so open about the fact that they weren't going to bring him back and allow him to move on, because on his day, he can step into it and he's durable and can do a good job for you. But Cowboys seem to have transitioned away from this offensive line, which was arguably one of the best in the league over the course of the last 4 or 5 years, to clearly seen a different size of it in terms of how they want to move on. But I'd be surprised. He, for me, strikes me as that second tier. We're going to see an abundance of signings over the course today, the next 2 to 3 days, 48 hours. And then come the weekend, we'll gradually see kind of the second wave of their signing. I see him fitting into that. I think some team will pick him up. But yeah.
Colm, I know you joined us late, so you missed some of the conversation earlier. But, you know, just interested before we wrap in your take on this free agency. It's been a busy window so far. You know, again, kind of like last year, funnily enough, teams are only allowed to talk to players and tamper on March 11th, and yet they're able to do deals in about 5 minutes. It's amazing these meetings of minds the teams have on the first day of free agency. But it has been an active window.
Yeah, look, I think a couple of things probably jump out. I think the fact that the jump in what guards are getting paid is probably really the one of the kind of things that really struck me. You saw the Jags give a big deal to Ezra Cleveland, and people were kind of wondering about that. And then you saw some of the numbers from some of the deals today. But that's where it's going. It's good news for the interior guys. They are going to be, you know, almost on a par with tackles, you would have to say, at this point in time. And I suppose some of the money maybe that you're, you know, because that's going to come from somewhere. And it seems that some of that is coming from the safety position, which appears to have been devalued by the league. And from the running back position as well, where the money hasn't gone up in the way that it has for, say, quarterbacks, tight ends, wide receivers. You know, you are seeing running backs getting the kind of, notionally, and I'm sure you discussed this, like, this is headline news right today. The devil is in the detail. We're going to find out about all these deals and what it really means. But while you are saying that, you know, it is amazing that they're able to get the deals done so quickly, AI and like what we're seeing and Kensington Palace and all that sort of stuff, I managed to get a glimpse into the future. And it's Brian O'Leary watching the Giants versus the Eagles next season. And there you have Brian watching Saquon Barkley run in a touchdown for the Eagles in MetLife.
Thankfully, that's not how our trip to Vegas ended, because that was a pretty gruesome end for poor El Joe Pesci in casino. No, the other thing that, to your point, is, you know, what free agency tells us, and it helps tip the hands of the front offices, it tells you what they're thinking about what's available in the draft. And you see that both in the moves they make and in the moves that they don't make. And it seems to me there's a pretty obvious sense that you can pick up good value in terms of offensive line, pick up good value in terms of secondary in the draft.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the draft and free agency do go hand in hand, and it does tip the hand then to maybe where certain teams are going to go. I mean, look, we know now Atlanta aren't going to try and move up for a quarterback. There we go. That's kind of sorted, you know. Maybe the Giants will, for example, at six, you know, depending on, unless they grab somebody else now, which I can't see happening. So, yeah, no, it's just that indicator, really, of where you think things are going to go. Teams are trying to maybe fill the odd hole in free agency, hopefully with an eye to someone in the draft, or maybe they'll get someone in free agency, which will then change maybe slightly what they were going to do in the draft. But again, it's all fascinating, and it's great that it all kind of links in. And for us, you know, the fun of kind of watching what they do and trying to kind of guess from there, that do we know what they're going to do? Is he doing this? Are they doing that? It's just why it's great days like this, just to sit here and kind of go through the deals and watch what's happening.
Finally, Brian, again, if we're talking about things that didn't happen, one thing that was slightly surprising to me is, you know, when you look around some of the teams that we haven't really heard a peep from yet, the Saints are one of them. You know, given their reliance on financial engineering for their roster, you'd think they'd have had to make a couple of moves, but they're not doing anything quite yet.
Yeah, hold my beer, as I say, because, you know, we're only a couple of hours away from the Saints striking gold and coming up some magical free agency acquisition, and people will tomorrow or the next day will be trying to get clarity around how they can do this when year after year they're completely in over the cap. The most fascinating team for me over the course of the week was Jeff Duncan, a Saints beat writer who we've had on the show time and time again. He did a live show with us in London at the Saints game years ago against the Vikings. Always really generous with his time coming on. Obviously, he got into a bit of a spat with Michael Thomas, who he suggested was going to be released. And that, for me, has been the leading talk of the town for the Saints over the course of last week. Because you're right, you mentioned the Cards as well. Another team who've done very little and very little activity, very little word coming out of the camps. Some teams are, maybe as noted as alluded to, are more conscious around what they're going to do in the draft as opposed to free agency. If they pick up a player here and there, that will only kind of benefit what they want to do come draft night on the 25th of April. Ultimately, other teams see it very differently. You know the teams today that are going hell for leather. Free agency is priority, draft complements. Other teams have a different strategic plan on how they're going to do it.
Well, when they do make those moves, we'll be here with you to analyse them. It's great to be back live with you on the Irish NFL Show. Plenty more to come before we even wrap the free agency window, never mind with everything else we got coming down the tracks, including, of course, that live show on Buskers, or at Buskers on the Ball, 28th of March with Peter King, as we were saying earlier. All tickets sold out, and thanks to everybody who bought one. Really looking forward to seeing you there, and we're looking forward to being back with you discussing more free agent moves before that.